Blog Talk Radio.
Yesterday, I think it was yesterday, I had the official Ponce de Leon look going. That's where my freak scruffy facial hair grows in, and I still have the random missing patches. So I, for whatever reason, look like Ponce de Leon. Today, it looks like I'm on an episode of Miami Vice. I've only seen Miami Vice maybe two times in my life. But I know that they wear, like, cheesy, you know, super bright colors. They look kind of tacky. They unnecessarily have, like, top buttons undone and fucking still with the weird facial hair. That's me. I'm rocking that right now. It wasn't on purpose, but the shirt I'm wearing is, like, a little too big. So just by virtue of the fact that the normal button I have undone, the very top button is undone, it looks like there's more than just one button undone. If that makes any sense? I don't have any chest hair. I need, in order to complete the Miami Vice look, I need to have, like, unnecessary chest hair. Chest hair that goes up, like, further than you feel like it should go up. But I'm rather hairless in the chest area. I don't know. I don't know what's up with that. But anyway, that was random. I got a lot of stuff to talk about today. A lot of really important stuff, actually. So, of course, I got so much on the mind in terms of Hillary Clinton's new strategy. Not new strategy. I mean, she's been going back and forth to this fairly often. But now her campaign is like, yeah, let's brag. Let's brag that Republicans support us. As you can imagine, I'm not very happy about that. Then I have two stories here that are so fucking important, and the mainstream media is just asleep at the wheel on this. So one, India and Pakistan, an unbelievably important story. I mean, apparently if you talk to, like, former presidents, they tell you, no, that's the issue that keeps me up at night, India and Pakistan. And there was just recently escalation in India and Pakistan. And I have a story from the Associated Press that's so colossally insane regarding the Philippines that I'm almost at a loss for words, and I think it's an emergency situation where you need the UN to step in at this point. I mean, it's wild. So I don't want to ruin it now, but let's go ahead and get started. We'll be at that story soon enough. I'm going to lead here with my anger at Hillary Clinton and get that off my chest. What else is new? And we'll also, don't worry, later on in the show we lighten it up a little bit, I think. Actually, I don't really know, to be honest. Maybe we don't. I'm not looking through the rest of the stories right now, but let's do it. Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton's campaign is bragging this week that they got Republican endorsements. So The Hill reports, during a Thursday conference call with reporters, Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta announced the new endorsements, including former GOP administration officials, former lawmakers, and prominent Republicans in battleground states. It's only the latest effort from the campaign to tout support among Republicans and independents who oppose the GOP nominee Donald Trump. Thursday's endorsements include former officials in the Ford, Reagan, and George W. Bush administrations. One of them said the following, quote, I was proud to be selected as part of the Reagan Revolution to work with President Reagan and to be a Republican my entire adult life. When it comes to this election, I have to put my country ahead of my party, and that means voting for Hillary Clinton. So there were a total of 40 endorsements that they bragged about. Now, apparently, when they launched one of these goofy groups, like Republicans for Hillary, effectively, I don't know what the actual name is, but that's what it is, they had 50 Republican endorsements that they were proud to get. I know that, for example, some Republican congressman in my state, New York, decided to endorse Hillary Clinton. And understand, so one of the reasons why this stuff happens is that you have a lot of Republicans from Democratic states saying that Donald Trump isn't crazy popular in those states. So it's almost like it's a sheer political calculation in some respects and in some instances where they say, oh, I have a better chance of getting reelected if I actually endorse Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. That's some of it. But the other aspect to it, and this is why somebody like myself and many other progressives and liberals who are part of the base of the Democratic Party, the reason why we don't like it is it's a well-known fact in U.S. politics to anybody who covers it closely that when Republicans endorse Democrats, it's not because they want to do your ideas. It's because you want to do their ideas. You understand that? So with Hillary Clinton, a lot of these people look at her and they go, let's see, voted for the Iraq War, check, I supported that too. Voted for the Patriot Act, check, I supported that too. Was in favor of NAFTA, check, I supported that too. Was in favor of deregulation, check, I supported that too. Overall is fairly hawkish, just like me. And most importantly, is willing to play ball with the donors, largely the same donors that these Republicans have. Now, don't get me wrong, some of the Democratic donors, yes, are less scary than the Republican donors. So, for example, when you talk about lawyers and teachers and unions, they're less scary special interests. I don't think there should be any money in politics, so I'd get rid of their ability to lobby too, but they're less scary special interests. The Republicans, you know, are more in bed with ExxonMobil and Big Oil, but they do share Wall Street friends. And when the establishment declares, hey, we're lining up behind this one, many Republicans follow suit because the Republican Party is just a total front for corporate America. I mean, Bill Maher said it best. You have this party that's like Civil War reenactors and flat earthers and religious lunatics mixed in with just a total front for Wall Street and corporations and whatever they want done. They lead the corporatocracy. So when the people who are in, you know, business and on Wall Street and in finance, when they turn around and say, yeah, we're going behind Hillary Clinton, many of these Republicans are like, okay, great, no problem. My whole thing is I want a Democratic candidate that Republicans, establishment Republicans, I should be clear, not your run-of-the-mill average Joe Republican, but establishment Republicans fear. They feared Bernie Sanders. You know, if it came down to it and it was Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump, I think they all would have lined up behind Donald Trump because they would have said, hey, with him, there's a chance that he's a wild card, but there's a chance that he's super establishment and he'll just listen to us. With Bernie Sanders, he's going to do right by the American people. He's going to fight to get Medicare for all. He's going to fight to get universal education. He's going to fight to end the wars and stop the military-industrial complex. He's going to fight to raise taxes on the super rich. This is a guy who they look at, they go, we can't fucking control him. He's FDR 2.0, anything but that. So I want a Democratic candidate who unapologetically stands up for social democracy and wants to make us like the other modern nations. With Hillary Clinton, they look at her and they go, kind of business as usual. That's upsetting to me. You know, I know it's weird because there's a lot of Hillary supporters who or just some people on the left in general who get mad at me whenever I do these stories and they act like, come on, Kyle, isn't the whole idea to get as many votes as possible? Like, okay, so she has Republican votes. Good. No, again, my response to that is what the establishment Democratic Party has done is they've said, we're so open-minded and we're so tolerant and we have such a big tent that we will allow the other party into our big tent, and we'll implement their philosophy for them. Well, at that point, there is no point to the Democratic Party. You're so open-minded and tolerant, and you have such a big tent that you just do what your opposition wants. Classic liberal mistake of refusing to take your own side in a fight. Well, no, I'm gonna take the liberal side in a fight. I'm gonna unapologetically stand up for liberal values and liberal principles and liberal policy goals. And I want somebody to be the head of the Democratic Party and to be the head of the country, to be the president who does the same. But we don't have somebody like that, which is why so many Republicans are comfortable enough with her, where they say, okay, we'll go with her. And also, don't get me wrong, so some people say, well, it's also because the fucking guy on the other side is an absolute lunatic. Sure, there's an element of that there as well. No doubt about it. Some of these Republicans go, no, he really is, like, unhinged, and I really don't trust him with the nuclear launch codes and this and that. And I get it, and I agree with that, but that's such a low bar to me. It is, because it's like, okay, he's the worst of the worst, but she still supported nearly every intervention conceivable. But hey, at least that's not nuclear annihilation, so I guess we go with her. I'd like an option, and I'd like a party that is just totally on the side of what the progressive base wants. And we've been abandoned and slapped in the face more than anybody can imagine. And it's time to change. It's time to fight back. Nobody should be touting these endorsements. You should be embarrassed if you're a Hillary supporter. And, you know, we heard that George H.W. Bush is supporting her. We heard that neocons from the Bush administration are supporting her. You should look at that and go, damn, what am I doing wrong? Okay, next. Bitch. We're off and running. We're off and running here on a Friday. You know what sucks? This is, again, random side thought here. Is it just me? I feel like when I have a sip of a drink and the drink is not cold, that it's not doing what it's supposed to do. Like if I have a sip of a drink and it's like room temperature, I'm like, that's nice. That didn't quench my thirst in any way. It just doesn't. You drink a sip it, you're like, I guess it's keeping me alive, but I want it cold, damn it. I want that refreshing, crisp feeling. But I'm not getting that. Anyway, if you couldn't tell by that random side rant, I'm sipping something right now that's room temperature, and I'm not enjoying it. Okay. All right, now let's go to one of the really, really important stories here that's just getting left out by the mainstream media. You would know that the media is doing their job if they decided to cover this in depth, and they just won't. So we have our answer. I have an incredibly important story here for you that deserves much more media attention, and it isn't getting it. India recently announced it did surgical strikes, as they call it, in Pakistan. Now, that is a gigantic admission, because in the past, India has done these, but they kept it quiet out of fears that it might escalate with Pakistan. But now they're just wearing it on their sleeve, and they're saying, yeah, we went to your territory, and we did some strikes. That's what happened. So Pakistan responded to this, honestly, in a desperate to save face. They said, no, you didn't strike us. Yeah, that's what happened. So they're doing that because the population in Pakistan, if they believed and knew, and the majority of the people were informed on this, and they thought, no, India actually did, you know, violate our sovereignty and bomb us here, they'd be like, oh, well, we're at war then. Counterattack. What are you waiting for? So the Pakistani government, I guess in some respects, was like, okay, pump our brakes here a little bit, figure out what's going on, collect ourselves, and then figure out how to move forward. So NBC News explains why this is all happening. They put it in context. They say, Pakistan has long been accused of housing and supporting militant groups that target India, including one which was behind the devastating 2008 Mumbai attacks that left over 160 dead. India's strikes Thursday appear to be retaliation for a militant attack that killed 19 Indian soldiers in Uri near the frontier on September 18th. The incident, the latest in a long string that Delhi has pinned on militants protected by Pakistan, provoked widespread outrage and anger in India. At the heart of the tensions between the two countries is Kashmir, one of the most militarized regions in the world, which straddles the India-Pakistan border. Both India and Pakistan claim all of Kashmir, but govern separate parts. India and Pakistan have fought three wars since independence from Britain in 1947, two over Kashmir. The two countries often exchange small arms fire across the so-called line of control that separates the two. India has the world's second largest army and Pakistan the world's sixth largest. The more than 700,000 Indian troops stationed in the disputed Kashmir Valley are grappling with a separatist movement in the Muslim-majority area. They are staring down almost 200,000 Pakistani troops on the other side of the border. Pakistan hinted they might retaliate. The defense minister said, quote, "If India tries to do this again, we will respond forcefully." Adding a dangerous element to the mix is Pakistan's consistent assertion that it reserves the right to use nuclear weapons preemptively. India has a no-strike first policy. Pakistan's defense minister repeated that claim last week after the attack on India's soldiers in Uri. Okay, so when you talk to former presidents and former heads of state, they will tell you the one issue that keeps me up the most at night is India and Pakistan. You have countries that are neighbors. They are uber nationalistic. They are fairly fundamentalist. And they're nuclear armed. Basically the perfect shitstorm. You look at that and you go, oh, that's designed to blow up. So with this escalation, and also, by the way, the populations in India and Pakistan are not helping, because very tribal militaristic coverage, demonizing the other, and it's entrenched. So you look at this and it hits you that, man, it's like we have this veneer of civilization over the top of endless barbarity and savagery all around the world. Like, if you think about it, World War I, 1914, it started. You know how many people died in World War I? 38 million. 38 million. That's unbelievable. It all started over the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. Like, you look at that and you go, oh, come on, there's no way that the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand is somehow going to draw every country in the world, a world war to happen. Because all these different treaties, okay, if this country gets involved, and that country gets involved, if that country gets involved, and this other country gets involved, the next thing you know, everybody's fighting each other, and nobody fucking even knows why. I don't know, I'm fighting because my country tells me, and oh, nationalism and pride and all this different stuff. So, but it would have been inconceivable if you told somebody 2 years before World War I, they would have been like, huh? What are you talking about? What does that mean? And what's an archduke? I don't even know what a fucking archduke is. And that's just World War I. You know, at the time, they called that the Great War. And then World War II happened, and people were like, oh, this one was even worse. So in World War II, 60 million people died. They didn't think it could get worse after World War I, and then it did, like, immediately after. So you had 60 million people die, and you got to understand, at the time, that was about 3% of the world's population. I mean, try to wrap your mind around that. You put 100 people in a room, you grab 3 of them out of there, and you say, you're going to die. And that's the breakdown of it. 3 out of every 100 people on the planet died in World War II. So again, we feel like when there's relative stability and peace, and again, I know that's not perfectly clear, because there's, of course, massive conflicts in Syria, South Sudan, you know. So I'm not saying everything is perfect, but what I'm saying is in many countries, there's a feeling of relative stability and peace. But, I mean, if you talk to people in Syria or South Sudan or elsewhere, they're like, bitch, this is like the temporary state. The human history is just a litany of people fucking people up, people killing people, people jacking their natural resources, people, you know, fighting over ideology and religion and nationalism and all these different things. And when you look at, so here's my contention. When you look at something like World War One, you go, oh, I don't even understand how a world war could have happened as a result of an assassination of a seemingly random archduke. When you look at India and Pakistan, I understand perfectly well how that shit can unfold into a nuclear war and how millions of people can die as a result of it. Guys, it's so important. Like, being a peacekeeper, calming tensions, it's so fucking important. It is so important. Like, if I see this, and I'm the U.S., or if I'm the U.N., dude, I immediately try to call a meeting with the leadership in Pakistan and the leadership in India, and we sit down and we talk it out, and I don't let anybody fucking leave the room until we come to some sort of an understanding and an agreement. Because you're playing with the lives of literally millions of people. I mean, that's what it is. So you have to be responsible. There's nothing that frustrates me more than the idea of, like, leaders of states treating human beings like pawns in a chess game. You know, just like disposable things on this global chessboard. That's unacceptable, and it's nearly incomprehensible in the year 2016. But my point to you guys is that is the case. And with an escalation like this, you just got to hope that cooler heads prevail, man. You just got to hope that that happens. You got to hope that leadership is rational enough to figure something out to avoid escalating to hot war. And then if it is hot war, I mean, the fact that Pakistan, like, openly says and does it on a regular basis, like, we reserve the right to do a nuclear first strike on India. I mean, that's like some Donald Trump level shit in terms of, like, unhinged caring about the consequences of, like, a very one-sided, myopic, stupid thing to say because you don't understand the fallout of that. You don't understand what that can provoke in response. You don't understand, like, how much of an escalatory move that is. Like, you can't say that. Who does that? You can't do that. What intelligent person would say, oh, yeah, by the way, we have nuclear weapons and we reserve the right to first strike your punk ass and maybe kill millions of civilians? What the fuck is that? You can't do that. But they do it, and they do it on a regular basis. So this isn't stable. This is I'm the bringer of bad news. Is that a thing? Is it the word bringer of bad news? I feel like people put a different word there. Carrier of bad news? I don't know. I'm the person who is presenting to you some disastrous information today. And you just hope that leadership around the world is sane enough and calm enough and cool enough to figure it all out. But I don't know about you guys. I don't have that much faith in leadership around the world. I wish I did, but I don't. I've seen, you know, too many things spiral out of control, too many situations escalate when they didn't need to. And I've read too much history to feel like, you know, this sense of civilization is permanent. It's almost like it's the temporary thing that we visit, and then human beings always somehow revert back to a disastrous state of affairs. I hope that's not the case here, but I fear otherwise. Scared the shit out of everybody. All right, I'm going to do this story. I don't really have the time for it before the first break, but I'm going to do it anyway because it is also super important. I have a story here from the Associated Press that's so colossally insane that it doesn't even sound real. In fact, when I read the headline, I was like, no, come on, that can't be the case. You click on the link, you read the story, you go, oh, shit, it appears to be true. So the mainstream media is not discussing this nearly enough. This is an unbelievably important story, but listen to it. They say here, the Philippine president has compared his bloody anti-drug campaign, which left more than 3,000 people dead, to how Hitler massacred millions of Jews, saying he would be, quote, happy to slaughter 3 million addicts. President Rodrigo Duterte issued his latest threat against drug dealers and users early Friday after visiting Vietnam, where he discussed his anti-drug campaign with Vietnamese leaders, among other concerns. Duterte said, "Hitler massacred," this is a quote, "Hitler massacred 3 million Jews. There's 3 million drug addicts. There are. I'd be happy to slaughter them." Are we living in a simulation? What is happening? What is going on? Is this some sort of sick joke? Whenever you feel like, you know what, it's 2016, we're somewhat enlightened, we've evolved to a certain point where, you know, human beings can deal and figure their shit out. No, bitch. Not even close. Not even close. I mean, if ISIS wasn't evidence enough, now you have a head of state. A head of state saying, yeah, genocide. Awesome. Can't wait. That's my goal. I plan to do that. I'd be happy to do that. All right, look, man. You got to do something. You got to do something. Everybody knows I'm a non-interventionist to my core. The only time I would use unilateral when there's a direct threat of violence against us. But I always say outside of that, if there is a genocide going on somewhere, so not a civil war, not something up in the air, whatever, but if there's a genocide going on somewhere, I'm not opposed to the UN getting involved. Of course the UN should get involved. Of course world leaders should sit down and try to figure something out and try to stop the pain and suffering and disastrous situation that's unfolding in front of them. So when I look at what Duterte is saying and what he's already done, and by the way, these are just his worst comments. He's given similar ones. But if I was President Obama, I would say, okay, well, now emergency UN meeting, we're all getting together, we're all going to figure out a sane, rational course of action in response to this. And if we can't find a way to basically make it so that we know he's not going to continue with a genocide of drug users and drug dealers, well, then we're going to have to do an embargo, we're going to have to do sanctions, we're going to have to crack down and force him to the position that we need him to be in. Now, believe me, I get it, and I've argued for it before. I don't believe that in every situation sanctions works. Sometimes they are counterproductive. In the case of the Philippines, it may actually work. If it gets to the point where we need to do that and you can't figure something out in an emergency meeting otherwise, you know, in the Philippines, there is a dispersion of power. So if you do sanctions on North Korea, for example, not going to work. It's not going to work because it is a literal, the authoritarian government, the structure of the government is authoritarian. So if it's just Kim Jong-un who has all the power, if you crack down, he's still going to be rich and it's only going to hurt the people. But if you have a system that is not a literal authoritarian structure, the Philippines is not a literal authoritarian structure, he has authoritarian tendencies, but the structure of the government is not authoritarian. Well, in that situation, if you crack down on them economically, yes, you do force their hand and you can get some changes. Why? Because then you have captains of industry and other important people in the country go to Duterte and they say, hey, jackass, we're suffering now. We're not making as much money as we were. Our deals are threatened now as a result of your dumbass, so you need to www.shutthefuckup.com. So in that situation, sanctions, an embargo, that could help it. But again, that would be the fallback option. The first option is you got to call an emergency meeting with the UN. You got to obviously get in contact with Duterte, figure something out, talk it out. This is not – you can't have a head of state in the year 2016. I love Hitler. I'd love to copy his tactics. Yeah, he slaughtered the Jews? Well, I don't agree with that, but I'll slaughter the drug users. Huh? Huh? No, that you're saying I'm going to be a genocidal, bloodthirsty maniac and fascist. That's what you're saying. You're saying I am going to be a terrorist. I'm letting everybody know that's what I'm going to do. You got to put pressure, man. Look, you guys know me. I said it before. I'll say it again. I'm not saying the U.S. government goes in with guns blazing and we knock them out or something like that. No. What I'm saying is, because I am a non-interventionist, but that doesn't mean you can't put pressure on them. That doesn't mean you can't call a meeting and get some sort of, you know, logical outcome or conclusion, or try to nudge them and force them in the right direction and let them know that this can't stand. You obviously have to do something. You can't have a head of state saying, I can't wait to slaughter 3 million people. You just can't have it. And then I haven't even started the conversation of how immensely stupid this is. I mean, obviously it's immoral, and he's saying, I want to be a you know, somebody who commits a genocide. Drug users, what is it with the fucking hatred? I don't get it. If you drink coffee, you're a drug user. Hate to tell you. If you drink alcohol, you're a drug user. You know, if you get a fucking prescription of anti-anxiety pills from your doctor, you're a drug user. Dr. Carl Hart says it best. He's an expert on this stuff. He says, not only do we not live in a drug-free society, you wouldn't want to live in a drug-free society. So this idea of like, well, obviously you're a bad person just by your very nature if you take substances, that is nowhere near reality. That's just on fucking Neptune. That makes no sense in so many ways. So it's birthed out of ignorance and stupidity. Like, he thinks, he probably saw when he was a kid or something, maybe his parents or whatever, I don't know. But, oh, I see a lazy drug user who ruined their life or something. Therefore, all of them are like that. Therefore, they deserve to die. What? If you were to look at it statistically, the overwhelming majority of drug users are good people who can, you know, live a normal life and keep everything in balance. Again, Dr. Carl Hart, who's an expert on this stuff, says 80% all drug users are normal people who can go about their lives and have no issues. And by the way, it's not like the 20% that struggle, kill them. Like, what is that? No, if anything, you say, maybe, okay, rehab in some cases, maybe people need some sort of help or whatever. But there's no nuance. There's no human empathy. There's no reason. It's just, he's just a fucking stone-cold bigot and a bad person. It's amazing to me that we're having this conversation in 2016. A guy's calling for a genocide in the middle of doing a genocide. If 3,000 people are already dead, his other comments were, kill him yourself. We'll have the police help you. We'll have the police do it for you. You won't get in trouble. I'll love you if you start killing these people. This is the shit that he said. And we're just looking at it like, oh, that's interesting. Anyway, what's you have a ham sandwich? What's for lunch? What the fuck is this? It's amazing that this is happening. I'm almost at a loss for words because it's so out there. But this is the world that we live in, and this is the reality that we're going to have to grapple with. Let me take a quick break. When we come back, President Obama did that town hall, and Bill O'Reilly has a hilarious response to one of Obama's comments. And we have a new poll out from Pew Research on the death penalty. You're not going to want to miss that because we have some interesting news. I was surprised by it. All right, guys, stay right there. Alright, we back, bitch. Alright, let's continue. Got some clips here on this one for you. This should be fun. I got a few surprises, a few twists and turns in this one. Two nights ago, President Obama did a town hall event on CNN, and during that event, he explained why he doesn't use the phrase radical Islamic terrorism. Well, Bill O'Reilly has a response to him here. Let's watch.
Most Muslims are not violent people. However, many Muslim nations... Everybody knows most Muslims are not violent people. However, many Muslim nations contribute heavily to terrorism. Iran, for example, is a rogue country that actually helps terrorists kill people. Pakistan allows the worst jihadists to live on its soil and plot their murder scenarios. Saudi Arabia allows radical Muslim preachers to indoctrinate children with hatred against non-Muslims. And in Africa, there are a number of governments that allow Muslim killers free reign. So the jihad is not an aberration. It is a well-financed, well-organized movement that has gained support among a significant number of Muslims worldwide. That's the truth. There's no question that Barack Obama is sympathetic to the peaceful Muslim world, and that's not a bad thing. We need allies like Jordan, Egypt, and Morocco. Those countries help us, and we should not alienate them. But any rational Muslim is not going to take offense at the words Islamic terrorism. Why? Because that would be irrational.
You ready for a little twist in the story here? I totally agree with Bill O'Reilly there. Okay, now, he made clear, and this is weird hearing it from Bill O'Reilly, admittedly. He says, any reasonable person would say it's not all Muslims. All Muslims aren't the problem. The overwhelming majority of Muslims are not violent people. So he makes that clear. And, you know, the argument I'd make to Obama is to let him know that if somebody uses the phrase radical Islamic terrorism, you're saying that they are saying all Muslims are bad or all Islam is bad. No, that's not what we're saying. We're just agreeing with the people who carry it out that how they define themselves is how we will describe them. Okay, maybe that's an inartful way of putting it, but if somebody says, I'm doing an attack for my religion, it's not a reasonable response to say, that's nice. No, you're not. Wait, what? No, but we're telling you that we're doing it because of our religion, and we can cite the verses, and we can tell you our motivation. That's nice. No. Nope, I refuse to call you that because I don't want the extremist to define the faith. But again, both things can be true. So you can have good people and bad people as part of a faith. The KKK can say we are a Christian organization, and that's true, and they cite their shitty verses in the Bible. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. can say, I'm a Christian, and that's true, and he can cite his, you know, lovely verses. Malala Yousafzai can say, I'm a Muslim, and she could cite her, pretty verses. And Osama bin Laden can say, I'm a Muslim, and he can cite his shitty verses. So my argument to Obama and my point to Obama is it's not the case that only the good ones count. They all count for all religions. Having said that, and randomly agreeing with Bill O'Reilly on something, does Bill O'Reilly actually agree with Bill O'Reilly? Let's find out.
Now, on Sunday, the New York Times headline, "Has Horrors Emerged? Norway Charges Christian Extremist." A number of other news organizations like the LA Times and Reuters also played up the Christian angle. But Breivik is not a Christian. That's impossible. No one believing in Jesus commits mass murder. The man might have called himself a Christian on the net, but he is certainly not of that faith.
That is adorable. He's doing the exact thing that he got mad at Obama for. He's mad at Obama because in Obama's mind, look, I don't want to offend peace-loving Muslims, so any terrorist that claims to be Muslim is by definition not Muslim. So you can't, no, look, if you do that, you're just not religious. That's just how it is. Bill O'Reilly, when it's his religion, same argument. Oh, somebody did something and he's part of my religion and I don't agree with the action he took because it was violent and it was terrorism. Well, then by definition, they are not part of my religion. Ha ha, gotcha. No, you didn't get us, just like Obama didn't get us when he says Islamic terrorists aren't Islamic. So, guys, so I'm begging the left and the right to come to their senses on this. Because what you'll hear from the right is what you just heard from Bill O'Reilly. You know, if it's an Islamic terrorist, yes, you could say it has something to do with Islam, and you can say that those terrorists are Muslims. Not saying all Muslims are bad, but those terrorists are Muslim, and many of them say, I'm doing it because of my religion. With Christians, you know, he does the opposite. What does he say? Well, I mean, you gotta understand that they're not Christian by definition. So I want everybody to admit, yes, religious terrorists are religious, and they count. And if they tell you they're doing it because of their ideology, that's probably one of the large motivation as to why they're doing it. But that doesn't mean all of them are bad. And again, this goes for Christianity, this goes for Islam, this goes for Hindu fundamentalists that kill people because they may have eaten a cow or killed a cow or something like that, which happens, unfortunately, fairly regularly in India. Both things are true. So in both cases with both religions, the bad ones count, the good ones count, and take that into consideration. The left needs to understand, you know, Islamic terrorists are Islamic. The right needs to understand Christian terrorists are Christian. And they can all point to their motivations and their verses and their holy books and say, yes, this is why I'm doing it. And again, with both faiths, most people are still good people in that faith. I'd like to not see, like, the different versions of shitty arguments from both sides on this. Now let's talk about the death penalty with some interesting results. There's a new Pew poll out on the death penalty and how Americans feel about it. And we have some fascinating results here and somewhat unexpected. So when we take a look at the trend chart, everybody can see here that in the mid-1990s, you had support for the death penalty peak at 80%. That is super duper high. Now, you can see there's in the mid-1960s, there's actually a slight reversal where more people opposed it than supported it. That's actually because the death penalty was temporarily found unconstitutional in the U.S. The Supreme Court said it's unconstitutional, and then later on, I think the Supreme Court overturned their own ruling and said, no, it is constitutional. So I guess public opinion kind of trended with the decisions made by the government. But again, as you can see in the mid-90s, 80% said, yeah, I support the death penalty. So fast forward to today, it's only 49% support, which is nearly a historic low for the U.S., and 42% actively oppose. So again, this is somewhat out of left field because in the U.S. it's historically been the case that there's, you know, for the most part, overwhelming support for the death penalty. But now that's starting to reverse. And it's weird that that's starting to reverse even though, you know, ISIS is more prominent than ever and you can see it on TV. We have mass shootings that are happening so often. But still, people, at the same time, people are like, I don't know, man. I don't know. Death as a punishment? So how do you account for that? Well, honestly, I don't know because I don't know what's going on in the minds of all these different people. But I do know what my take is on it, and maybe it's the case that more people are coming to my position on it, which is, look, in theory, I'm not like many on the progressive base who oppose it even in theory. In theory, I actually support the death penalty because, there are hideous crimes that are committed where somebody, you know, like, slaughters children. We covered a story a while back of a guy who could only get off while stabbing little girls. Terrible. People killing people and flushing their intestines down the toilet. Serial killers, just monsters. People who are like genuinely defective morally. And that's what they do. And in a situation like that, I feel like the just response is the gut response of like, yeah, no, fuck that person. You know, off with your head for all I care. I wouldn't actually do beheading, but, you know, gone. I don't care. You're eliminating you is eliminating a problem. You are what you do, and you did the most hideous thing imaginable. So that's my gut reaction. My gut reaction is there is something just in the most extreme cases of saying, rehabilitation is a fucking pipe dream for you. So I'm not interested in that. You're gone. You're done. You did something that is unforgivable. But again, that's just in theory. Because in the real world, what happens is we simply do not always get the right person. So the system is not perfect, which means sometimes we kill the wrong people. And that, to me, is unforgivable and unacceptable. If you get even one wrong person, well, then your entire system is guilty of murder. So by your own logic, you got to give the death penalty to the death penalty system and have no more death penalty. And that's really what it boils down to me, is that I'm only against it because we don't always get the right people. If we got the right people and we can reserve it for only the worst of the worst circumstances, then I'm not opposed to it. I don't, am I the kind of person who's, like, for example, going to come to the defense of Nazis at Nuremberg when they get the death penalty? Like, well, come on now, this is a violation of our leftist values. No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. We know we got the right people. We know they did these hideous crimes. There is a just reaction in that. There's some justice in that of, well, now we put you through a process, we ascertain guilt or innocence, and then you get your due punishment. But again, since we don't always get the right people, I can't bring myself to support it. Because then, yeah, your tax dollars are perhaps, in some cases, going to kill innocent people. And maybe that's what people are thinking now that they oppose the death penalty. Maybe that they're getting to that point. Or maybe it's other arguments. You know, maybe more liberal arguments do appeal to them, where they say, that is more of a reflection on us than it is on the criminal. Even if they did something hideous, it would be better incumbent upon better people and moral people to not treat that person like they treated others or whatever. You know, there's obviously arguments to the left of me where people can make that. Maybe that becomes more appealing to people. I don't know, but there is a shift. I'd venture to guess that maybe it has something to do with millennials. Millennials are much more liberal, much more progressive than the older generation. They're much more educated than the older generation. Maybe they look around the world and see how the United States is on a list with some very unsavory countries in still having the death penalty. Virtually all other modern nations have gotten rid of the death penalty. Maybe it's something like that. Again, I don't know why it is, but it's a good trend, and I would like to see us get to the point in the U.S. where we no longer have the death penalty. So, but not because of the reason many other people on the left give, but my reason, and the most important one to me, is that just sometimes we get the wrong people, and I can't have that as part of the system. So on those grounds, I would get rid of it. Okay. All right, next. The Intercept has a report here on a new project from the Pentagon that's getting no coverage in the mainstream media, even though it should. They say U.S. military documents reveal new information about an American drone base under construction in Niger. The long-planned project, considered the most important U.S. military construction effort in Africa, according to formerly secret files obtained by The Intercept through the Freedom of Information Act, is slated to cost $100 million and is just one of a number of recent American military initiatives in the impoverished nation. So, super random, they're like, I have an idea, let's build a drone base in Niger. Hey, $100 million, sprinkle it on that bitch, and we're done. Isn't that great? Now, the thing that came to my mind as I was reading this is, if this was for any other initiative, people would be asking, how are we going to pay for it? 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 But since it's the military, I feel like military is just walled off in many Americans' minds, and they go, well, We never question that. Why? Why don't you question that? Of course you should question that. We spend more than, what is it, the next 10 biggest nations combined on the military, and most of those nations are our allies. Nobody pumped on the brakes to say, whoa, hold on now, what's happening? We have 800 military bases around the world. It costs $100 billion a year to maintain all those military bases. And they're just gleefully building more. Like, yeah, well, why not, man? Why not? It's not like we have cities in the U.S. where we can't even get them clean water because the infrastructure is so bad. Yeah, that's actually exactly what's happening. Well, but to be fair, it's not like our overall infrastructure gets a grade of D when experts look into it. Actually, that also is exactly what's happening. So we got, our fucking infrastructure is crumbling here at home. We have disaster on top of disaster. And the government's like, that's nice. Don't care. How about a military base, a drone base specifically, in Niger? And, okay, understand. So now you could say, well, Kyle, they're doing this because they got to kill the terrorists, God damn it. You got Boko Haram. You got Al-Shabaab. That ain't good. We got to go after them. Al-Qaeda. Yeah, I hate those groups too. Let's see how effective the drone program is. Whoops. Turns out, not effective in any way. According to internal government memos that leaked, these were the drone papers, we found out that 90% of the time they're getting the wrong people. 90% of the time. We have sworn testimony from former drone operators who said the culture of drone operating is a disaster, and people openly talk about taking out the, quote, fun-sized terrorists. So in other words, you kill a little kid and you go, oh, that's all right. You're going to be a terrorist eventually anyway. What are you going to do? They say people are drunk on the job. Just the list goes on and on of how big of a disaster it is. Still building away. Build another drone base for all these disastrous missions that fail time after time. And believe you me, they create more terrorists than they kill. They create more terrorists than they kill. So this is the state of the U.S. at the moment. This is how we decide to spend our resources. It also ends up inflaming hatred against us, and it's not like we could use that money at home for more important things. Time to change it, and this is what we get under a supposedly liberal Democratic administration. Just imagine what the right-wingers would do. Okay. All right, let me take my final break here, and then when I come back, we have a massive setback in the marijuana movement. And we also have a really interesting story about a protest on a college campus that went awry in so many ways. Twists and turns in that story, too. So we're going to talk about that and much more. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back for an awesome final 30 minutes here on this Friday. Yeah. son of a bitch. I'm back here with you. All right, let's do it. So much to get to, so little time. We have a massive setback in the marijuana movement that we learned about yesterday. Huffington Post breaks it down for us here. They say, quote, an effort to allow veterans to access medical marijuana in states where it's legal died Wednesday night when Congress passed a spending bill, provision included. The Veterans Equal Access Amendment would have nullified a Department of Veterans Affairs standard that keeps its doctors from recommending medical cannabis as treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, pain, and other conditions experienced by veterans. So it wasn't that long ago that we covered this, and I was fucking excited, man. I said, I wish we'd just go further already, at the very least decriminalize it nationally, but at best legalize it nationally. But I said, okay, you know what? We're inching in that direction. So, and any little bit helps. So when they come out and say, medical marijuana for veterans, totally, that could be something that's very beneficial to a lot of these people. I said, okay, I'll take it. Little win, I'll take it. Now we're learning, but, not so fast. A bunch of dickhead people in Congress said, you got to leave that one out there. I'm not so sure I'm on board with that. Okay, we have fucking dinosaurs running the country who are totally out of touch with what the people want and what the people like and what the people know and what the science says. How many times have we covered the beneficial aspects of marijuana? I mean, the list goes on and on. The list is endless. Do you know how many veterans have directly told the government, okay, no, okay, I have all these issues. Nothing worked. No, SSRIs did not work. Whatever pills you threw at me, anti-anxiety or otherwise, did not work. You know what worked for me? Weed. And look, it's not for everybody. For example, I'm not a fan of marijuana. It just doesn't vibe with, you know, my brain for whatever reason. But for many people, it does work. And when they tell you this is the only thing that helped me, this is the only thing that saved me, I was suicidal and then now, hey, I'm living a normal life and I'm fairly content, how can you look that person in the eyes and say, no? I mean, you have to be the most close-minded, childish moron to just slap that down. Or, in many instances, it's corruption. I mean, we covered stories last week about how you have the pharmaceutical industry, people who make fentanyl, which is more powerful than heroin and oftentimes kills people because they overdose on it. The people who make that are lobbying against the legalization of marijuana. The pharmaceutical companies that make synthetic marijuana called Marinol, it comes in a pill. They say this is going to be competition for us, so let's pump hundreds of thousands of dollars into the anti-marijuana campaigns. Also, by the way, the DEA is against legalization. They're trying to keep their fucking jobs. So they're like, oh, that's nice. We're going to fight against that. Alcohol companies, they lobby against the legalization of marijuana. Why? It's their competition. Or so they think, by the way. I don't even know if that's the reality of it. Beer people are usually beer people. Weed people are usually weed people. Or alcohol people are alcohol people. Weed people are weed people. But they're like, no, we can't. Even if it cuts into how much money we make by 1% or 2%, got to nip it in the bud, can't have freedom, can't have liberty. This is the cancer of money in the political system. I mean, that's just unacceptable. You're having decisions made not based off of what's good for the people and what makes sense. Decisions are made based off of money. I mean, guys, this is fucking crazy. We're still debating medical marijuana for veterans. What? When the veterans tell you I had PTSD, now I don't have PTSD. When the veterans tell you, hey, you know, killers had other side effects that brought me down. Well, the weed was the only thing that worked well. Again, I don't understand how you can tell them no. This is such a no-brainer. Do you have any idea how many veterans you slapped across the fucking face with this? Do you have any idea how many people you hurt as a result of this? This reminds me of the Kratom ban. So the DEA steps in and you know what? Schedule 1. We're going to do Schedule 1. Why? I don't know. We had like 60-something calls into the Poison Control Center because somebody did it. Oh, that's nice. How many millions of Kratom users are there? Like 62 people mixed it with a different substance, and then got sick. And now we have to ban it. Meanwhile, the Kratom users are telling you, hey, I take it to deal with anxiety. Hey, I take it because I was addicted to pain pills, and this doesn't kill me. I could overdose on pain pills, but this actually saves me. The list goes on and on. Virtual harmless substance. They go, I don't know, ban it. Either because we're idiots or because we're doing the bidding of Big Pharma, but gotta ban it. You have no idea how many lives you're ruining. Or you know, and you just don't give a fuck. Either way, it ain't legitimate. It's not legitimate. Every veteran should spark up in solidarity for this shit. This is unacceptable. Even in the age of the internet, when we have all of the information on the benefits of marijuana, they're like, no, 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 we disagree. We're not going to do it. No, no. What does that mean? We have all the evidence. We know that it helps people. They're telling you it helps them. They will literally tell you face to face, this helps me. I need this. No, no, we disagree. We're going to make the decision for you. Fuck off. Okay. Next, 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 next. Looks like we have our own version here of Rodrigo Duterte. What? Yep, in the U.S. Wait for it. I'm going to tell you about it. Representative Tom Reed, who's a Republican of New York, introduced a bill called the, get this, Help Ensure Lives Are Protected Act. What a ridiculous name. Who could oppose that? By the way, for the record, I'd like the record to note that I'm against making sure lives are protected. Like, it's so Orwellian. Stop, stop, name it what the fuck it is. So, that gets to the main point of the story here. What does the bill do? It gives the death penalty to drug dealers. I'm done. I give up. What are we doing? There's no hope for humanity, man. Anytime you think for a split second, things are going well, hey, maybe we advance past our, you know, visceral, primitive past. It's like, nope, nope. We just covered the story earlier in the show. Rodrigo Duterte, the leader of the Philippines, says, you know, Hitler killed 3 million Jews. I'd love to kill 3 million drug users. You know, I'm going to do it. Fuck it. I'm going to go for that. We have our own Rodrigo Duterte light here. Now, this guy doesn't go as far as to say kill addicts and kill users like Duterte does. But he says it's actually specifically for heroin dealers. Kill the heroin dealers. Kill them. Kill them. Okay, so you do know more people die in the U.S. from alcohol. More people die in the U.S. from car crashes than from heroin. Do you think we should put the owner of Ford to death? Do you think we should put, you know what, put that one aside because it's an imperfect analogy there in comparison there. It's cars and that's different than substances. But should we put how many thousands of deaths are there every year as a result of alcohol? Should we take the head of Jack Daniels and kill him? Were you or were you not somewhat responsible for selling substances to people that ended up killing them? You did, right? Yeah, but that wasn't the goal. I'm selling this to them because they have the freedom to buy it. Bop, bop, bop. Are they dead or are they not dead? Okay, yeah, they're dead, but I wasn't trying to kill them. Bop, 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 bop. You're responsible. We must kill you. Okay, obviously that logic makes no sense in that respect, but with heroin? Okay. Again, for those of you who don't know, hospitals use morphine. Morphine is effectively the same thing as heroin. So if a hospital gives somebody too much morphine and they end up dying, death penalty for the doctor. The degree to which this makes no sense. Okay, Percocet, Vicodin. These are all opiates and opioids and, you know, the different pills. It reacts similar in the body as heroin does. Should we put the head of the pharmaceutical companies that kill these people with these pills to death should they die? Again, by your own logic, you'd say, yeah, but nope. They donate to me, so they're cool. If somebody ODs on pain pills, which is effectively the same thing as ODing on heroin, it's all right. That guy gets a bonus, and he gets a house in the Hamptons. And I go to the same cocktail parties as him. But if it's a street heroin dealer, death. Okay, we got to stop with these authoritarian bullshit approaches to solve a problem. And by the way, if he would argue, I'm just trying to cut the number of deaths and the problems associated with drugs, man. That's what I care about. I care so much about the victims. Okay, if you really do care about it that much, decriminalize all drugs. But you're not going to do it. Even though we know that that's the answer. How do we know? Portugal did it, and it worked. If you legalize, tax, and regulate drugs, crime associated with drugs, overdoses associated with drugs, plummets. We know, we have the evidence. For fuck's sake, just look at prohibition here in the U.S. When you had prohibition, more people died from bad batches of alcohol. You know what that is? They cut it in fucking bathtubs with all types of chemicals they shouldn't be using, and then every now and then there'd be some alcohol where you drink it and you die. Because it's not regulated efficiently, and they don't have the proper procedures to make it, so people are getting sick and dying. Never mind the crime that spiked because the mafia controlled the alcohol market. Now we have the drug cartels controlling the drug trade. If you legalize, tax, and regulate, that's not the case anymore. You could have legitimate companies, you know, selling a product, and then when there's a problem, you sue and go to court and wear suits and ties like civilized people, as opposed to solving it in the street with an AK-47, which is what happens when they're illegal. But again, reason, logic, evidence, data, throw it out the window. Who gives a fuck? Kill them, drug dealers, kill them. And aren't I so civilized? No, you're not. And also, these guys will turn around in a second and say, I believe in freedom and liberty. That's what I believe. I'm a Republican. I believe in all that stuff. Freedom and liberty. So, like, for example, freedom to put in your body whatever you want to put in your body as long as you're not hurting anybody else? Do you believe in that freedom? Well, no, not that one. Kill the drug dealers. So then you don't believe in it. I believe in it except for when I don't believe in it. Right, so you don't believe in it. That's what that means. All right, next. We have quite an incident to talk about that occurred this week on college campuses. Oh, I'm sorry. A college campus. What college is it? Oh, sorry. East Tennessee. Let me try that again. Bungle through, baby. We have a pretty big incident to talk about that occurred this week on a college campus. Huffington Post explains here. Police arrested an East Tennessee State University student on Wednesday after he disrupted a Black Lives Matter protest by handing out bananas while wearing a gorilla mask. Tristan Retke, a freshman at the university, also reportedly had a bag emblazoned with a Confederate flag symbol and a bunch of rope. He was charged with one count of civil rights intimidation for the on-campus incident. Okay. So there are multiple different aspects to this story, and I want to break it all down for you. So the first aspect is he a bad person? The answer is obviously. You're not, you know, some sort of hero. You're not some sort of rebel for standing up and saying, I'm going to wear a monkey mask, give bananas to black people, have a Confederate flag on my backpack, and have rope in it, like a noose, basically. Like, that's the whole idea of it. Like, oh, you know, here's some rope. Everybody knows what that means. That doesn't make you some sort of a hero. That makes you an asshole. And, oh, please, these are the same people who would then turn around and say, I'm not racist. I'm not a bigot. I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean racist? Racist. Fucking leftist always throwing around the word racist. What? I just fucking wore a monkey mask and handed out bananas and have a Confederate flag on my backpack and hand rope to black people. I'm not racist at all. And then, they could pivot. Oh, I was trolling. It's an interesting way to troll if you would then turn around and say, I'm not racist. So, okay, on the one hand, is he a prick? Absolutely. And by the way, the protesters in this instance were totally peaceful, and one of them was holding up a sign, for example, that said, Black Lives Matter does not mean all lives don't. So in other words, like, that is – I like how he's protesting and trying to explain things and be reasonable and put it in context. and say, like, no, like, this is what I mean when I say Black Lives Matter. I'm not saying white lives don't matter. I'm not saying blue lives don't matter. I'm not saying all lives don't matter. I'm saying we feel like our lives don't matter right now, and, you know, we're trying to get people to realize that and to try to help address, fix the problems in policing, for example, that would ameliorate the problem. So, like, they were totally peaceful and stuff. But here's where there's the twist in the story. Dude, how do you not realize that when the authorities arrest this guy and charge him with something, that now you made him a victim, now you made him a martyr, and now you're the bad guy? And I even have no problem saying, yeah, the authorities are the bad guy in this instance. Because you can't do that, man. Look, you have a right in America. This is what freedom means. You have a right to be a bigot and an asshole and a prick. Now, that doesn't mean that I can't call you a bigot and an asshole and a prick. Of course I'm going to do it. I'm doing it right now. That guy's a bigot and an asshole and a prick. But he doesn't get arrested for that. That's not on the table of options. Okay? And, this is a test of, it really is a test of just how much you really do believe in free expression. It is, man. It is. It really is. Because if you can look at this and say, oh, I fucking hate that guy, but yes, obviously he shouldn't be arrested, congratulations, you passed the test. You actually believe in free speech, you believe in free expression, you believe in free protest. If you look at this and you let your hatred for this guy, justifiable hatred, overcome you to the point where you say, fuck it, throw the book at him and I hope he gets time in jail, now you're the bad guy and you just made him the victim. How the fuck can you be silly enough to make a guy wearing a monkey mask, handing out bananas with a Confederate flag and rope look like a victim? Well, some people just did it. They managed to fucking do it. You're giving him exactly what he wants, and again, you're becoming the bad guy. Now, to really put this in perspective, flip the script for a second. Flip the script. So, imagine you have a Blue Lives Matter protest somewhere, okay? And you have somebody who comes to the Blue Lives Matter protest dressed up as Trayvon Martin, you know? Or dressed up as some other black victim in the case of George Zimmerman, it wasn't police abuse. It was just a random asshole killing Trayvon. But, okay, so take Terrence Crutcher, any example. You go to one of these events dressed like that and wearing a sign or something saying, I'm stand with Terrence Crutcher or whatever. And, I don't know, you find a way to – oh, better example. You go to one of these events wearing a shirt that has a cop as a pig. And you taunt them. You taunt them and you're aggressive in how you taunt them. You don't do any physical violence, but you let them know, I don't like you. In that case, yeah, of course the Blue Lives Matter people, they would be like, arrest them and charge them with something. Now, in that instance, if they did that, all of us should say and would say, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. So you don't believe in free speech. You don't believe in free expression. You don't want to do your job of policing properly. Because that was – sure, you could say that was offensive. Sure, you could disagree with his tactics. But that falls squarely on the side of free speech. Well, guys, it's the same thing in this instance. Just because we like the guy doesn't mean it's not the case. And I don't like the guy. And he is a bigot. He is a racist. I mean – he might as well, what's the next step above what he just did there? Come out with a fucking swastika on your shirt saying I love Hitler and shit like that? Like, you're just one step below, like, wearing a fucking KKK hood and shit. So you're a bad dude. But of course I wouldn't have you arrested. And think about it. My buddy brought this up to me last night. If he wasn't arrested, literally the entire country would praise the protesters today for their restraint. And by the way, they were restrained, and they do deserve nothing but praise. But now the conversation today from many people, and rightfully so, is, come on, you can't arrest that guy. So instead of having the conversation about how racist that guy is and how big of a bigot he is and how bad of a person he is and how this may be trolling, but it still speaks to his character, so on and so forth. Instead of having that conversation, now the conversation is mostly, nah, but come on, you made him a victim because you arrested him just because he was fucking being a douchebag. You're allowed to be a douchebag, man. So I'm here to tell you guys both things are true. Guy's a bad person. Do I think this is – no, it's not fucking funny. Who the fuck – if you find that funny, chances are there's something wrong with you, man, if you find this kind of trolling and this kind of action funny. So, yeah, he's a bad person. Yeah, he's a prick. Yeah, he's an asshole. I would never arrest him, not in a million years. Okay. All right, now let's go to a story I've been trying to get to for a few days now. This one is on Jordan. Not Michael Jordan. The country Jordan. Reuters is reporting on a heartbreaking murder that occurred in Jordan recently. They say, a gunman shot dead Jordanian writer Nahid Hatar on Sunday outside the court where he was to stand trial on charges of contempt of religion after sharing on social media a caricature seen as insulting Islam, witnesses and state media said. The gunman was arrested at the scene, state news agency Petra said. A security source said he was a 39-year-old Muslim preacher in a mosque in the capital. Hatar, a Christian and an anti-Islamist activist who was a supporter of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, was arrested last month after he shared a caricature that depicted a bearded man in heaven smoking in bed with women and asking God to bring him wine and cashews. Okay. So think about the multiple ways in which this is infuriating. First of all, he was on trial for contempt of religion. No. Stop, 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 stop. How is that a crime? That shouldn't be a crime anywhere. Okay, I love how they manage to flip everything. If there are theocratic laws, they always flip it. So, sure, I put you in handcuffs. Sure, I'm going to lock you in a cage, potentially for years on end. Sure, I'm going to ruin your life, but it's okay, you offended me. No, you know what's offensive? What's offensive to me is the fact that you put him in handcuffs and you put him in a cage and you ruined his life. That is way more offensive and a way bigger slap in the face than anything he said to hurt your feelings by disrespecting your religion. I file that under getthefuckoverit.org. Stop. Stop. So, I mean, think about if we did that to other people. So we meaning non-believers. Did you just express a religious opinion? Whoa, 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 whoa. Did you just express a religious opinion? Fucking lock them up. Where are the handcuffs? Put them in a cage. You just said something that was religious, didn't you? You think I'm going to stand here and take that? I'm so offended. I'm so offended you said something I disagree with. I'm going to lock you up. Everybody on the planet would go, what the fuck are you talking about, man? Are you an idiot? Are you a lunatic? You want to lock somebody up for disagreeing with you? When you flip the context, you have atheists doing it to religious people. It's like, oh, whoa, that's insanity. But it's so common to have theocratic laws where religious people do it to non-religious people that a lot of people are just like, oh, I don't know, it's just another day. It's not another day. That's a fucking tragedy, man. We got to stop it. So he's on trial for joking around about religion and getting at something that is true, which is that religion is fucking mythology. And what happens? He gets fucking murdered outside of the courthouse. I'm so offended by what you said, I will now kill you. Yet again, what is more offensive to me is that you would kill somebody because you were offended. That makes you the bad person, all the way. So that's true immorality. That's true injustice. But again, they can't see it because the mind is so warped by fundamentalism. This is terrible, man. This is terrible. And my heart goes out to every secularist, every person who believes in freedom of expression, freedom of speech, freedom to protest, in various theocracies around the world. Not cool. Okay, now, let me give you some good news here. Switch it up for you. Man, do I have some good news for losers, including myself. The New York Daily News reports, people who suffered acne end up staying younger looking longer than their clear-skinned classmates, according to scientists at King's College London. The new research published in the Journal of Investigative Dermatology on Wednesday took blood samples from 1,205 female twins, 25% of whom dealt with breakouts in their lifetime. The scientists studied the protective caps, or telomeres, on their chromosomes, which protect the cells from aging. And the pizza faces, their words, not mine, had longer telomeres than their peers with perfect complexions, meaning their chromosomes live longer. Dermatologists have long noticed that acne patients often take longer to develop wrinkles, thin skin, and other aging signs than those who weren't cursed with crater faces in their youth. Again, I love the language that they're using here. Fucking win for me. When I was younger, disaster, son. So they tried to put me on like the topical stuff. Retin-A Micro was one of them. Man, that stuff is shit. Like, you put it on, boom, instantly your skin dries out. It's all like red and chafy, and the acne's still there. You're like, what the? This doesn't work at all. What are people doing? But nonetheless, I was on that for a while. Then I love this one because now you know the consequences of this. Apparently, there's some sort of antibiotic that actually work to help a little bit to fight acne. I think amoxicillin. No, maybe. Was it amoxicillin? I don't remember the name. Forgive me for that. But they give you a pill that's a fucking antibiotic, and I was on it for like over a year. It's like, isn't this like part of antibiotic resistance? Like, now that because people like me are doing this shit because you're telling me to do it? You look back now, you realize that. I didn't know that shit at the time. But I was on that for a while. That worked a little bit better, but still not great. And then eventually, oh, I did it, bitch. I did it. You know what I'm about to say. Accutane. Accutane is like, you know, the equivalent of thermonuclear war on your fucking disgusting pimple face. So I took that for a while. That worked amazingly. What's funny is a lot of dermatologists won't prescribe it because it's in some really freakishly tiny percentage, 0.001% or whatever it is. You know, people got depressed and somebody committed suicide or something. I don't know if that was actually linked to the Accutane or not, but the person took it and that happened, so they had the warnings on the boxes and shit. If you start taking it, yada, yada, yada. But I took it. Obviously, didn't affect my mood in any way, and it worked. And I was on that for a while. But I had some fucking beastly acne that tried to fight through whatever I used. They were like, no, bitch, I'm staying. No, bitch, I'm staying. It was only the Accutane that finally beat it. So I just walked you through a history of how disgusting my face was. Always tune in to Secular Talk. You learn something new every day. But this is good news because if indeed this is true, that if you had acne that you stay younger looking when you're older, I'm going to be good till I'm 87, bitch. Holla at me. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. Much love. Whew. We'll see you on Monday. We'll see you on Monday. Everybody, enjoy your weekend. I'm about to go pig out right now. Mwah. Peace.